At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll and home of the patented, highly anticipated Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho, Duff McKagan calling you. I hope everybody's doing well there. Listen, you know why Bob Marley collects mason jars? Yeah, because he's jamming. Jamming with you. Okay, thank you. Bye.
That could only come from the mind of Duff McKagan. I actually love that one. Or maybe Axl gave it to him. Who knows? You never know what's going on at the Guns N' Roses bad joke club. But Duff makes us laugh today, every single Friday as well. Duff and GNR getting ready to head on the road again to South America on September 1st. And then they're hitting Mexico, Asia, Australia, New Zealand, all before the end of the year. And Fozzie going back on the road too. We're hitting United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales, England, all before the end of the year as well. Save the World Tour fires up again September 8th in Columbus, Ohio. Tour in the world, FozzieRock.com for all the dates and ticket information, along with the details on our legendary VIP meet and greets. We're also headed back to Europe in November. Like I said, we're going all across the country, all across the UK, Birmingham, Nottingham, Dublin, Belfast, Swansea, Bournemouth, Bristol, Glasgow, London, Brisbane, Australia, Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, Auckland, New Zealand. We are going everywhere. Toronto, Montreal, FozzieRock.com for all ticket information and VIP details. Come rock with us. All right. Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer, frequent guest here on Talk is Jericho, returns to talk about the circumstances surrounding Vince McMahon's surprise and sudden retirement from the WWE. He shares what he knows about the allegations against Vince, how those were leaked to the press, and what may have forced Vince to leave after Vince said he wasn't going anywhere. We talk about Stephanie McMahon and Triple H leading the company, and how Nick Khan and Stephanie, how they might handle the co-CEO situation, since there's three of them. Stephanie, Triple H, and Nick Khan are leading the company. We discussed WWE's potential creative and culture changes with Stephanie and Hunter at the helm, how much of a hand Vince will have in creative decisions from the sidelines, what kind of impact this will have on AEW and the rest of the wrestling industry in general, and what the future may hold for WWE and for Vince, including a possible sale. So here we go. Dave Meltzer to talk all about the retirement of Vince McMahon right here on Talk is Jericho. So the day has finally come that I would say that I never saw coming, and I probably Dave would agree with me on this. Of course, Vince McMahon retired, air quotes, from the WWE, and basically persona non grata in the company very, very quickly. Are you still as surprised as I am, Dave, that this has even happened?
I mean, the whole last, whatever it's been, month, 6 weeks, has been, it's blown my mind because... I mean, at some point he was going to be gone, but it was always going to be this monumental, incredible seismic shift in the world when it happened. And, you know, you never expect it to happen like right now. And then when the story started breaking, I started thinking, you know, it's really possible. And I know I have people who are friends of mine in, you know, Silicon Valley corporate, and they were telling me he's going to be gone. And I was kind of like, well, he may be, but this is wrestling and it's different. They go, this is a, you know, publicly traded company and you can't do that stuff with employees. And, you know, when the second Wall Street Journal story, you know, happened, I read that and I thought, you know, he's going to be out. But then like a week later, it's kind of like, well, he'll never leave. and then the day that it came out that he was resigning, it was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? It's like 40 years of my life has been chronicling Vince McMahon, among many things, but more Vince McMahon than anything else. And it's like, you know, for both of us, because you've worked there for, you know, starting in what, 99,
almost 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you were following it since you were a child, Vince McMahon's wrestling. So it's like this huge part of both of our lives is like over all of a sudden, you know, and it was really, it was weird to deal with.
It's interesting. I spoke to Alex Van Halen a couple of months ago, and he was saying when Eddie Van Halen passed away, and it's like this whole 40-year career gone in one last breath, you know, and obviously Vince is still with us, but it reminded me of the same thing. 40 years plus of wrestling and Vince McMahon synonymous, and then done that quick, boom, gone.
Yeah.
And it really did surprise me because once again, maybe because, you know, you and I live within kind of the wrestling bubble where it's like, it's just wrestling. Nobody takes in the corporate world takes wrestling seriously. And, you know, he beat the government and he's been through this scandal. He's been through that scandal. And this one will just go away. I was really thinking for a while that it was just going to be kind of a flash in the pan. And then Vince would just make it disappear like he did everything else.
Yeah. And it's funny because it's like, it's like, you know why he left in the big picture because of everything, but there's still unanswered questions of how did it actually go down? Like, did the rest of the company go to him and go, you just have to leave? Or did he come to this conclusion that I have to leave because the walls are closing in on me? Because, I mean, like on July the 2nd, you know, in Vegas, when they had the pay-per-view, Money in the Bank, he told all the talent he's staying, you know?
Right.
And 3 weeks later, you know, they find out he's gone. And you know, the people who I talked to and probably you talked to, they were shocked because, I mean, their whole lives have been determined by Vince McMahon, every one of them since the day they started in the company. And now it's like, what's going to happen? And now, you know, we kind of know who's in charge of what now. You know, it took a couple of days to figure all that out. You know, it's like, but we know, but it's still, it's like, it's a different world and a different culture. And, yeah, it's just so weird that no Vince McMahon in wrestling.
Well, and like you said, too, he told the talent, and obviously he was given kind of a proverbial, you know, maybe not a middle finger, but a shoulder shrug when he came out on TV.
Right.
You know, twice, and not even to do anything substantial, just to say like, hey, guys, here I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Especially the first time when it was the day that the story first broke and he came out and it was pretty clear, you know, the whole thing of like, hey, I'm going, you know what I mean? I'm going nowhere. Yeah. I mean, and then he actually left. Yeah.
So let's kind of go back a bit and kind of talk about how this story all started brewing. And we could talk about some of Vince's other big scandals in the past, but let's talk about this one specifically. When did we start hearing about it? And were there kind of rumors swirling that something's coming up, or was it just a report that came out of the blue a couple months ago?
The first report in the Wall Street Journal to me came out of the blue. I had no idea anything was up. And it's funny because I got this text, and it was from the Wall Street Journal on my phone. And, you know, it's like I get texts from them when it comes to news all the time, you know. And so I figure out, you know, like something's in news. And I looked and it says WWE scandal Vince McMahon. I go, whoa, 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 whoa. This is like my real world all of a sudden. And so then I read the article and it was just like, wow. And from there, you know, it all started unraveling. The second article I thought was a lot more damaging than the first, but the first article was the one that got all the publicity. You know, it was on CNN and Bloomberg and all the business people were covering it. Every media source was covering it. The second one, which was the more detailed one, it got some coverage, but it was almost like nothing. And it didn't the first night, the ratings were way up. Vince came out. The second time Vince didn't come out, the ratings were not that much up. Not that many people were talking about it, yet it was the second story, or perhaps fear of the third story, is what, when that comes out, is what got him.
And what exactly was the first story that we heard?
The first story was that he had hired a paralegal who then worked as a paralegal and then was moved to a director right underneath John Laurinaitis in talent relations, and that he was going to pay her, because it was an ongoing deal, a total of $3 million when she left the company, which would have been early this year. Basically hush money to cover up an affair, and apparently an affair with John Laurinaitis as well. And John Laurinaitis is also gone, although no announcement has been made, but, you know, Triple H, Paul Levesque, has taken over as head of talent relations, which was John's job. So he was gone too, with less fanfare.
At first I thought he was going to be the scapegoat. Like, hey, we got rid of Laurinaitis, you know, and Vince is because then at that point in time too, didn't Vince step down as the CEO? Now, was that a figurative move, or was it ever made public that he was stepping down?
Yeah, no. They announced that he was stepping down, and Stephanie was taking over as interim CEO. and Laurinaitis was stepping down as talent relations, but it was described as temporary while the board of directors does this investigation. And they had hired a real firm, you know, a very real firm to investigate him. And the investigation's still going on. And maybe, you know, perhaps they found stuff out. But at that point, I was thinking, like, now, how does this go down? Because you've got a board of directors with Vince, who's the number one, you know, the leading shareholder, Stephanie, his daughter, and Paul, his son-in-law, and Nick Khan also. And then you have eight, at the time, non-wrestling people. You know, they're right. Major businessmen from other places. So is there going to be like, okay, so the investigation is going to go on for however long, and then there's going to be results. And then what happens? Do they vote? And then how do they vote against Vince when Vince is the major shareholder? So it was kind of like, is there going to be some big mutiny? And one of the guys on the board ended up quitting, you know, right before the second article came out, a guy from ESPN, mm-hmm. and Connor Schell. So, you know, that was kind of like what kind of happened with the first article was that it was and she had signed an NDA. One of her friends, for whatever reason, she had an NDA. Somehow one of her friends found out, and her friend sent a message to every member of the board. So this would have been in late March, and saying this is what happened, and was very, you know, very negative about Jerry McDivitt, you know, like pressuring her and things like that. And you know, she couldn't come out, but somebody did, and they investigated and found out that it was real. And in the investigation, they found out it was not the first NDA, that there had been several others over the years.
Now, let me ask you this. Obviously, from a moral standpoint, it's completely wrong, and we're not discussing that. But from a specific legal standpoint, why was that deemed like illegal or something that could bring the company down? If Vince decides to pay employee A $100,000, $200,000, $300,000, isn't it his decision as the boss to pay anybody whatever he wants?
I guess one of the things in her case was that she was hired for $100,000, and then during a time period when they were cutting people left and right, when the pandemic started, Vince went to give her a raise from $100,000 to $300,000, which is, you know, for an office employee, that's a gigantic raise. And it kind of waved red flags. And then people kind of talked him down and go like, you can't go from $100,000 to $300,000. So they basically compromised and went from $100,000 to $200,000. But because that's company money, and he's allegedly having an affair with this woman and paying company money and all
gotcha.
That. That's where it became, you know, kind of, you know, an SEC situation. Yeah. 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 In today's corporate world. Yeah.
And even though, and once again, we have to delineate this, because WWE is publicly traded and because it is a corporation and a company, even though Vince owns it, it's not his money to do what he wants. It's now company shareholders, stockholders' money as well.
Yeah. And gotcha. I mean, most of the money is, that's how Vince got as rich as he got, was by going public and the stock being worth so much money. You know, I mean, he was always, you know, he's always well off and never had to worry about money for the rest of his life. I mean, that was the case 20 years ago, but now he's like, you know, worth $2 billion.
Right.
And, you know, before, I mean, he was worth, you know, he was worth hundreds of millions, but $2 billion is a, you know, he's in a different league now. And the company's in a different league. You know, the company.
Sure.
Yeah. The value of the company is whatever. It's over. It's in the $5 billion range.
See, and that makes sense too, Dave, because that's something like, and you, I'm not going to speak for Vince, nor would I ever try to, but I can see somebody in that position going, it's my money. It's my company. I'm the main guy. I can spend what I want on whoever I want, even though it's not right.
Well, I mean, like, look, you and I have been through, we are not young by the standards of, I don't consider us old at all, but mm-hmm. but some people would. Okay. But right. We have been around for a long, long time, and we have seen standards and morals and things change. I mean, there are so many things, you know, I mean, it's, and you kind of got to jar yourself into this world, because like, I always joke around with people, and you know, whenever these things come up, and I go like, you have no idea the business that I grew up in the 70s,
right?
And the stuff that I've seen and the stuff that you've seen and all of this stuff that people are talking about. And we're going like, I mean, I'm going like, I mean, you know, but today it's a different world, and we have to go by today's standards. So you kind of like get jarred into, hey, it doesn't matter what you saw 50 years ago in the San Francisco territory backstage, you know, and how flagrant all these things were. It's totally irrelevant, because today, yes. you could do none of that stuff today.
No, I remember sitting in the Winnipeg Arena as, you know, fans chanting a derogatory term towards, you know, LGBTQ people that begins with an F and it's two syllables chanting it in the arena. And the heel going like, shut up, I am not. And like,
and encouraging
little
it.
Kids just chat. Nah, 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 and you'd be like, oh my gosh, can you imagine that? In context, it's ridiculous.
You know, so it's funny. I was at a PWG show, I think it was before the pandemic. And, you know, one fan. And I think it might've been Jungle Boy and Trent Beretta. And there might've been other guys, might've been a tag match. But there was one fan in the whole audience who said something like that. And my first reaction is, I've heard this a million times. I heard it at every WWE show during the Adrian Adonis period. And, you know,
right, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just part of wrestling. But everyone in the audience got mad and the wrestlers just looked at him and they were furious. And I just was, it was just like, wow, this is totally unacceptable today. And should be. And absolutely. Should be.
Sure.
But it's like it brings you back to this was commonplace in another era of wrestling, but that era is long gone.
So to compare that, what you're saying, what Vince was doing about, you know, hush money to whoever's having an affair with, it was more of a commonplace thing, probably not just in wrestling as well, but you're talking about, you know, in Hollywood and in rock and roll. I'm sure
rock
that happened music, a lot. Yeah,
sure.
Entertainment in a whole.
Yeah, I mean, that I always figured that the managers of the rock stars, you know, I mean, I didn't know this. I wasn't that close in rock music when I was a kid, but just from being around wrestling, I figured this happens in rock music and it happens in, you know, NFL teams and everywhere where stuff happens and someone, you know, complains and they pay money for it to go away.
Sure.
You know, and certainly that happened in wrestling. I mean, every now and then there would be something that would make, you know, when something would make the papers on somebody or somebody would get in trouble. I remember the thing that I would always hear from the talent. This is now we're talking the early 80s. It was like, well, shouldn't the promoter have just paid this to go away? And
right.
Then, and like, I, to me, I was like, okay, that's a little weird. But then I realized that it's just inherent. The promoter protects his main stars. And that's why the main stars did it, because they were protected for the most part. I mean, you've heard all the stories of, you know, just the stuff of like the understanding that like in the territories, you could drive 110 miles an hour. And if the cops pull you over and you're a wrestler on TV, you know, those stories. It was inherent. Hey, here's two tickets to the show. Thank you. Give me an autograph for my kids. And, you know, you basically had carte blanche to do not anything, but anything minor. They're going to just look the other way because you're a star.
So let's talk quickly. So as we start getting towards the second report, what was the status at this time of Stephanie McMahon and Triple H? Because when Vince steps down, Stephanie steps in as the new CEO, but it wasn't just a month earlier or so when she was gone from the company.
Yeah, May. So that was another shocker, was in May when she, you know, took a leave of absence. And, you know, when it's funny, when it came out, you know, there it almost nobody knew about that was coming, but there were people who did know.
Right.
And there was a reason, and I don't know the reason. Nobody would tell me. I mean, they would just say, there's a reason. You know, I kind of like that encouragement to dig, but like three people in the world know, and, you know, all three of them aren't going to tell me, but there was a reason
right.
that she left. And then, you know, they filled her vacancy. You know, they filled her spot. It wasn't like she was going to go for, you know, a couple of months. I mean, they hired someone from Manchester United to head her division. And so she's gone. And then when he steps down as CEO, she's the new interim CEO. So I hear that and I go, okay, he's stepping down figuratively. She's in the spot for a corporate reason and he's still head of creative. So I figured it's like, it's a cosmetic thing. I didn't think it was anything serious, but it was interesting that she left, you know, which was supposed to be for a long time. And I mean, I think the word was she would come back at some point, but no time soon. And now all of a sudden she's essentially in the highest position in the company. And now a couple of weeks later, you know, her and her husband, Paul Hunter, are basically running the entire wrestling into the company.
Which is interesting too, because when she left, there was almost kind of some derogatory statements made towards her, almost a little bit of a burial.
Yeah. I mean, and that one's really surprised me. And I had actually heard this from other reporters. And then it came out in Business Insider, the Business Insider website, newspaper, whatever, where they basically said she wasn't good at her job and that Vince was the one who made the decision to let her go.
Jeez.
You know, not she was leaving. And I knew that to be false. Like I was telling people, I go, I know this to be false. I know she left on her own. Why are they burying her? I couldn't figure it out. And people were, you know, everybody's speculating why you would do that. And then here she is. It's like one of those things where, I don't know. I mean, I just remember like certain people would be gone. You've been through this. People that you don't like, let's say, are gone from power and you're celebrating. And it's like, you know, I'm never going to have to deal with them again. And then like 8 years later, all of a sudden they're back in that position.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute. And maybe you've even been, you know, maybe you haven't, but I know people who have, you know, when they're gone, just buried them and buried them and buried them very publicly. Then all of a sudden they're your boss. And then it's like, man.
Oh yeah.
You never know who's going to come back. You know, I mean, it's like people who you think are, you know, long gone from wrestling.
That's why you never talk bad about your buddies when they break up with their girlfriend or their wives. if they come back, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So it's interesting too, because at this point in time, Triple H was gone because he suffered the heart attack. Shane was let go 6 months prior. So at this quick point in time, there was no other McMahons around except for Vince.
Well, Paul was back when Stephanie left.
Gotcha.
So he had actually just started working, but Shane was gone. But he was not, he was doing like NIL deals and scouting and things like that, where it's like he's got a job and he's important and he's, you know, taking pictures with people and everything. But it wasn't as if, you know, he was running creative for NXT since the start of NXT, and he was always involved in the creative situation, and that had kind of stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, yeah, it's another thing of like a guy who was out of creative and out of talent relations, and now he's running both again. And, you know, and it's probably a good thing. I mean, everyone's, you know, for the most part, I mean, there's uncertainty there, of course, but a lot of people are just excited. It's a new, you know,
right.
Vince had been running it for so long that it was probably time in some ways for somebody new to just come in with new ideas.
So let's move on to the second report now. Because the first one we mentioned earlier, it comes out, Vince steps down, you know, figuratively, but he's still on TV, tells everyone he's not going anywhere. What happened in that second report to make things where he was not as flippant about it anymore?
So they had four allegations and a total of $12 million in payments, including a $7.5 million payment to a female wrestler, which was interesting because the basic story of her is that she was in the company, and the claim was that Vince coerced her into oral sex.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she broke up, whatever it was, she was demoted. And then when her contract expired, she was let go. So she was never fired.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like 2005, 2006 when this is going on. And there's people who could sleuth and look at the people who were fired and kind of come down with, you know, there's, you know, maybe one person or a couple people that fit that bill. And then in 2018, the same person got the settlement. So she was quiet for a dozen years, didn't say anything. And then she got a settlement, but not just a settlement, like $7.5 million. And there were a couple of other $1 million settlements. There was a $1 million settlement for an NDA on another woman having to do with John Laurinaitis. So, you know, that was the one where John was sealed if he wasn't sealed the first time. Like I knew, like John Laurinaitis is not a guy who's going to have two allegations against him publicly and be saved.
Right.
Vince McMahon, on the other hand, you know, all bets are off, who knows. But the second one, because there were so many and it would total $12 million, and the fact that the company didn't know and didn't list it, you know, as far as they're a publicly traded company, that was the SEC violations. And that's another thing. Like the SEC is doing an investigation. There's a federal probe.
Wow.
And all these things are going on Vince. And so because of those things, it looks like that's why he had to step down. I mean, certainly temporarily, but it looks like it's, I mean, just because of everything, I think it's got to be permanent. But the question is, he's still the number one stockholder. He is off. He did also leave the board of directors, which I think he had to. So he's got no title in the company. He's gone from the company he created. And, you know, Stephanie did the thing on television, basically saying he's retired and thank you, Vince. And that's it. They never mention his name again. There's little hints here and there where they kind of say things are new. But yeah, his name hasn't been mentioned since the Stephanie thing.
So going back to, and once again, you can sleuth if you want and figure who it might be or what the candidates are, but I don't want to talk about that. What I want to talk about is, why would the settlement be so big? Like you said, $7.5 million.
gigantic.
That's huge. That's huge.
Yeah, but it might be because that's the one that really could have brought him down in 2018. Mm. In 2018, you know, Vince is way invincible. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes up with, you know, whether true or not, or she perceives it this way. And, you know, people can perceive things different and go like, you know, you coerced me into sex and then you let me go. And if I go public, it's kind of like that one would be a face and it would be someone who people would know from television.
Right.
Said, you know, and, you know, most likely the woman's probably not that this matters, but, you know, that diva era. So right. It's someone who, you know, you look at it and people will go, oh my God, you know, it's like, you know, she's hot. Right.
So
that kind of looks bad, you know, not to mention Vince being married. Although I don't think, you know, it's funny because I don't think that the fact Vince was married has ever played in any of this because people completely accept that part.
And that's the funny part too. And just to clarify what you're saying, the diva era that was Diva Search, where we're finding lingerie models and Playboy models and bringing them into wrestling. So by design, they were there to be there because they were gorgeous women.
But yeah, I don't think that made the difference as much as just a face coming out and saying this, and then the public kind of like, you know, I mean, I guess the public is going to believe what they want to believe.
But something else that it's really interesting to me, like you said, Vince in 18 being invincible, and now leaving so quickly, it really is kind of, you think maybe because the whole Me Too era happened that made it even worse for him?
Absolutely. And also, you know, look at, I mean, much bigger fish than Vince have been, you know, have had to leave companies. Because when the second story came, that's when people were going to me and I was even going like, you know, I mean, there are people, you know, like Vince is so powerful in wrestling, but in the real world, there were people a lot more powerful than him that are gone from, you know, their companies. And I mean, the one that like surprised me in a sense, and he had to go, but I mean, I remember Bill O'Reilly on Fox News and he was the king of cable news.
Right.
This was like this is a guy who's one man ratings juggernaut. And I thought like, and you know how much money there is when it comes to that type of, you know, the number one position on cable television. And I just thought there's got to be so much money to back this guy. And he was gone and he's never come back. And he was, you know, so that's when it really hit me that like, if this stuff comes out, you know, no matter how big you are, Harvey Weinstein or whoever, you know, it's like, you know, if it's public, you know, no matter what your power is, you're vulnerable to it, as you should be. I mean, if you use your power on women, in this day and age, I mean, you know, it happened in the past and all that, but there's so many horrible things that happened in this world in the past. And it's a good thing that those things are no longer acceptable.
Sure.
I mean, it's a sign of progress.
And you're mentioning now, because something I thought was very interesting that you pointed out, when Vince finally sent out this random tweet that, you know, at 77, it's time for me to retire. It was after 5 o'clock on a Friday, which means that the stock market closed 4 o'clock.
5 minutes earlier.
5 minutes early.
Right. It just closed. And they, so the timing of that was perfect. You know, they wanted it on a Friday so that the market wouldn't, they thought it would, you know, if Vince was gone, that maybe it would crash because when George Barrios and Michelle Wilson both got fired by Vince, the stock went way, way down. And Vince is obviously far more powerful and you know, far more influential. But the funny part is the opposite happened because all of a sudden everybody was going like, with Vince gone, they can sell this company now. You know, Vince might have held up a sale. And so the stock's going to be worth more because now people know that they can buy the company. So it hasn't hurt the stock. You know, I mean, that was the first thing I thought is, okay, now Vince being gone, now the stock's really going to be in trouble.
Right.
And then it went way up and people are going like, hey, you know, and it actually, the stuff about the sale had actually kind of started brewing in Wall Street before Vince was gone. You started hearing rumblings that people just expected, like it was more likely to happen. And then as soon as Vince sold, it's like, okay, now there's all these stories going out of who's best to buy the company. And, you know, the sale's been talked about since 2016.
For sure.
But, you know, now it's like, you know, it's closer to reality. And I think the stock market reflected that.
Okay, listen, we know Vince. And I guarantee he had never once ever even said the word retire. So for him, you know, to leave under the auspices of retiring, it's just not in that guy's DNA. What happened that week, that day, that made him do that so quickly? Is there something else coming out?
I don't know of anything. I mean, there's people who are working on stories that I'm aware of. Perhaps, you know, the board got something in the investigation, or perhaps it was just that second story where, but I mean, look, he was still in creative for a couple of weeks after that second story, and that one didn't seem to hurt that much. But obviously there was something huge, and I'm sure it was not a voluntary decision, but it was one of those things where you are now in a position where you're going to hurt the company. And I do believe that if Vince McMahon thought that he was going to hurt the company by staying, that he would leave. I think that's the one thing he would do. He's not going to take his legacy down. I mean, the WWE is his life legacy. It's going to be there long after he's gone. And I don't think he wants to be the one to take it down. I think he wants it to live forever. But, you know, like that one question that you're asking is still the big one, unanswered question. Who said what to Vince?
Right.
Who said, you got to go, Vince? You really got to go. And I don't know who that is. And I don't know what the thing was, whether it was the, you know, the $7.5 million settlement, or whether it's something new, or just the idea that these stories are going to keep coming and keep coming, and you're going to have to leave anyway. So this may be the time to leave.
Was it, what was I going to say? Yeah, well, that's the thing. I think you had a great point of, because there was some times where I would see some of the booking decisions that Vince was doing over the last couple of years and going, is he trying to like be a Dr. Frankenstein? And, you know, this is my creation. If I can't, you know, own it, I'm going to kill it. But that's not, Vince would never do that either. You know,
No. Hey, look, you know, we always watch the shows and there's things that I look at and go, oh God, you know, I mean, what's nobody's 100%. Yeah, what's he doing? But, you know, I mean, the one thing is like, you know, they were losing popularity. And that's one of the reasons that, you know, AEW was able to, to get where you got so quick. But in the last year, and especially not even, I wouldn't even say the last year, the last few months, but even before the Vince scandal, I mean, the Vince scandal definitely helped the ratings. And I don't know if it helped live attendance, but live attendance is up and ratings are up in WWE, and things are hotter. You know, I mean, it's really been the last couple of months.
Right.
They had good luck coming off the pandemic, but that's with John Cena everywhere. And then when John Cena left, it went to, you know, I mean, normal levels, which are good, but it really shot up in the last, you know, before this. So it's like, I've been noticing, okay, there's something that's happening there. That's a positive. They are growing, which they haven't really grown in popularity in a long time.
And was the official explanation that Vince retired, or was it that he resigned? Like, what's the rest of the behind the scenes at?
Okay, so the corporate thing filed with the SEC is that he resigned. The company says resigned, retired. It's all the same thing. I don't know if it is, but that's how it was explained to me. Is like, I asked, like, what's the difference? And it's the same thing. But the official word is resigned. Retired was the word he used in Twitter, and that Stephanie used on television.
So how, I mean, and once again, because we're in wrestling, it's maybe harder for us to let it go. Whereas in the real world, it might be like, dude, this is it. So is there any chance, possibility that Vince could still have some sort of influence, but from afar?
Of course.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's Stephanie and it's Paul, you know, right. I mean, it's people he's going to deal with all the time, and he's going to say, hey, you should do this, you should do that. And maybe, you know, somebody said it's going to be really interesting when he goes to Stephanie and go, hey, you should do this. And what if she says no? But will she say no? I mean, it's like her dad's her hero,
yeah. You know,
and her dad created that whole world. And if he has advice, you're going to listen. You know, you've talked to him when you're not an employee, and he'll say something, and you'll, you know, because of your respect for Vince, you know, having been in the business for so long and been so successful, you're not going to, like, you may not agree with it, but you don't dismiss it out of hand, and you do listen to it. And maybe you just go, hey, you know, he's probably right. And maybe I can do this or something. So I'm sure that he's going to watch the TV. I don't believe for a second he's not watching the TV, and I'm sure he's going to pass stuff along. And so I do believe he will still have influence in that way.
Now, let me ask you this. Here's an interesting question. So he still is he's the owner of the company, essentially, right?
Well, he's the largest shareholder in the company. And he still has the voting power, you know, on the board of directors, but he's no longer on it. I don't know that he can exercise it. And that's maybe one of the reasons people think that there will be a sale, because, you know, I think that there might be pressure him to divest, but you can't like sell 38% of the stock in one day of the whole company, right?
Right.
So, because then it becomes different. So that's why I think people think he's got 38% of the stock and he's going to have to maybe divest himself. So therefore, they're going to be looking for whether it's NBC Universal or, you know, Disney or whatever, you know, Fox, you know, somebody to buy Vince's stock. And then he will be out of the company. And that's probably where the sales, you know, where the sale rumors really come from.
But once again, just to clarify, if he's the largest shareholder, he's still the owner of the company.
The people own the company, but he's the, I mean, I guess the, he's the, you know, but yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. My point is that if you and I work for our boss, if we're working at a, you know, a hamburger store, and the boss says, I want you to start making the hamburgers, you know, with chili sauce. And we're like, well, that's not going to work. Hey, he's the boss. You have to do it. So even though Vince isn't the boss on site, could he still say it's my company and do it? Or, you know what I mean? Like, I guess what's the balance?
But he doesn't have the power to hire and fire.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So he can't do that. But I mean, yes, there's going to be influence in some way, shape or form. Plus, you know, what if there's like a problem? This is an interesting one. What if there's a problem with somebody? I don't know if it's an arena or a television station or someone that Vince has a longstanding relationship with. I don't know that he can directly call the person to settle it. But in, you know, in some way, shape or form, there's going to be like contacts that he have and things like that. So it's like he's gone, but I don't buy 100% divested, no influence whatsoever, because look at who they put in charge. They didn't put, I mean, Nick Khan's in charge of the business end, but the wrestling end, which is, you know, Vince's thing, that's Vince's, you know, son-in-law and protege and his daughter and protege. So it's like, it's people who learn Vince's system and people who, if they have a problem and they're stressed out and they don't know how to answer, who's the person that they're going to call? I got a problem with talent. This guy is just driving me crazy. What should I do? Or, you know, this, you know, I'm trying to, you know, whatever, close some deal or something like that. What do I do? You go to the person who taught you, your sensei, you know, so his fingerprints in some form are going to be on this product, you know, in a form, you know, for as long as he's mentally capable, I believe, or it's totally sold.
It's one of those things where, like, you know, anytime Vince calls you, you're always a little bit like, uh-oh, like there's a little bit of an aura about it. So it's almost one of those things where, like, hey, we're having a problem with, you know, Brock. He's losing his mind, or he won't do what we want him to do, or whoever it may be. If Vince actually goes, I'll give him a call, even though he's not the boss, he still has that presence.
Yeah. I mean, I just as a weird thing that I recall in UFC, okay, so Lorenzo Fertitta was the boss, and he actually sold all of his stock. He was out. But at least the first year or two, every now and then there'd be something where there'd be a problem with talent, you know, when the fighters or something, and Lorenzo would call because of the prior relationship and, you know, just keeping his finger in his own way. I mean, you know, even though, I mean, I guess he owned like, I think that he did maybe retain like a couple of points in the company. So maybe that was it too. But he didn't have the number of points Vince has. You know, it wasn't like that.
Let's talk a little bit about the co-CEOs, you know, because it's something that I dealt with in WCW where we didn't really know who the boss was. It was Eric, but it was Hogan and it was Sullivan and it was Hall and Nash and whatever. And even in AEW, the early days when we had the concept of the EVPs, until Tony finally said, okay, I'm the boss, there was still a lot of like, well, I think it should be this. I should think it should be that. In WWE with Nick Khan and Stephanie, kind of the co-CEO, and obviously Hunter has a lot of leeway as well, who's the boss that the talent would go to that has the final say?
I mean, I think it's Stephanie, because Stephanie is the wrestling end and Nick is the business end. And I have been told from people who know, you know, Silicon Valley stuff much better than me, I live in the place where these giant companies are.
Right.
They've told me co-CEOs don't work. But I brought that up to WWE and they said that there's no other option because Nick doesn't know Nick is a wrestling fan. It's not like he doesn't know wrestling, but he's not a guy who's going to be doing creative of wrestling. And Stephanie is not the big wheeler dealer deal maker that Nick is. So you need that business person, Nick, and you need that wrestling person, Stephanie and Paul. So it was kind of like told to me, like, this is the thing that it has to be. But you know, like, again, what if there is a showdown in some form where Nick is adamant about one thing and Stephanie is adamant about the other? I mean, do they flip a coin? Do they, you know, draw straws? Because they're supposed to be equal power. And that becomes like a weird situation. Sure.
Talk a little bit about the influence of Nick Khan and just kind of how, you know, where did he come from? And he's just risen the ranks of power to the point, like you said, he's basically running that whole side of the WWE. I never even heard of this guy up until about a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever it was.
So Nick Khan, I was aware of Nick Khan and knew of him. He was the guy who negotiated the big television deal that's basically put the company in this financial level. But he was a very famous sports agent, you know, and well-known deal maker. He was one of those guys behind the scenes that in the sports world, like all the sports reporters, you know, they knew him, but they never mentioned him. And he was one of those guys where you don't ever mention my name, but, you know, he talked to people. So the day he was hired, I was like, oh, wow. You know, Nick Khan. I was stunned because, I mean, he was an agent, and you don't really think a guy goes from being, you know, even though he was a well-known sports agent and he negotiated the Fox deal and the NBC Universal deal. But the Fox deal to me was, you know, the big one in a sense. You know, negotiating with Fox to get them back on network television was a real coup. And then I guess that he had, you know, met everyone in doing that deal, and they somehow, I don't know if he suggested he wanted a career change or they brought up, you know, I mean, he was hired as president. It wasn't like he was hired,
right?
Hey, you know, let's come in as a vice president of, you know, deal making or whatever. I mean, all of a sudden one day Nick Khan is the new president with this, I believe, $35 million, you know, 5-year deal. And, you know, I mean, which was, I'm sure, far, far more than he was making what he was doing, although I'm sure he was making great money what he was doing.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like, wow, you know, Nick Khan. I mean, I'm aware of Nick Khan, you know, I mean, but it's like just one of those names that you kind of know in sports. And it was just kind of like, wow, Nick Khan.
Hmm.
You know, so, but yeah, I mean, I didn't even know how much of a fan he was or wasn't, you know, I mean, he did grow up watching wrestling, but he's not like you and I, where we grew up immersed in it. Right. He was, you know, a guy, he was like our friends, you know,
yeah.
Watched wrestling with us. You know, I think, you know, he was like that. And then he became a big, big deal in sports. And the thing in sports that I knew about Nick Khan also is that he's one of those guys who knew everything. And when it came to sports deals, like, he knew where the SEC rights were going to probably go and how much money these things were fetching. And which was great, which I thought was a great thing for WWE, because, you know, he knew the landscape of the deals, you know, so he knew, like, is Netflix going to get involved? Is Amazon going to get involed? What are the people behind the scenes in those places thinking that even the people in WWE, while they would know, they wouldn't know at the level Nick would know, because Nick knew everyone in the deal making, in the sports deal making world. I mean, even, you know, just in when it came to things that I had heard from people, you know, in the sense through him about certain deals in sports that were being talked about, or this person would get the rights. I mean, he was pretty good at knowing the money value and where things were going, and still to this day. And when he does the conference calls, you know, the quarterly calls, like, he'll go in there and go, like, you know, his mind for sports, sports rights, not necessarily sports themselves,
right,
rights. It's like, he's one of the top guys understanding that business. So, I mean, he was a great signing for WWE at the time. When I thought that, I was like, wow. I mean, for where the world is going, you know, what streaming services, how streaming's going and all that stuff, they hired a guy. I mean, they couldn't have hired a better guy, or certainly one of the best guys. So that's where I kind of knew of what I knew of Nick Khan when he got hired.
Okay.
Gotcha. Originally, so here's an interesting one. So the agent, Vince's original agent for deals was Ari Emanuel of Endeavor. Okay. And then what happened was the UFC deal and the WWE deals for television were coming due at roughly the same time. And I don't know if it was Nick or somebody else, but somebody went to Vince and said, like, it's kind of a conflict of interest now that Ari Emanuel kind of is the owner, you know, of the UFC, and he's negotiating for you, and he's negotiating for UFC. And it's kind of like, you know, he might not be the right guy to be negotiating for you. And that's where Nick became the guy. They left Endeavor and went with CAA, which was Nick's job. So that whole thing came because Endeavor bought UFC. And like, at first I thought, like, isn't this the weirdest thing that they're both like that? You can go in there with power, but at the same time, like, who is Ari going to favor, the company he owns or the company he just licenses? And they were both, look, they were both going for Fox. I mean, like, you know, UFC ended up with ESPN, and, you know, WWE getting Fox was partially because, you know, Fox knew that they were, you know, I mean, Fox, I mean, I don't want to say WWE was their backup, but UFC was wanting a lot of money, and they basically could get WWE for, I don't know if it was the same money, but, you know, they had an interest in WWE. And, you know, first, I mean, people don't know this, but the original idea was that Fox wanted Raw, not SmackDown. And what happened was USA had the right of first refusal, and for both Raw and SmackDown, to match any offer. And the numbers got so high, and USA basically felt, we cannot lose Raw. We cannot lose that Monday night 3 hours. So they met the offer for Raw, but the numbers got so high, it's like, okay, you know, we can't afford both. So SmackDown went, and then they had offers from, Fox, but there were also other offers. But I think that the idea of going to Fox was, hey, it's network TV. Even if it's the same number from somebody else, we don't get the same level of exposure. And then UFC obviously made the deal with ESPN as a sport. It was a better fit for them.
You mentioned earlier that stocks went up when Vince was removed because people were thinking that there's a sale was going to be more imminent. Is this something that you still think is going to happen? And if so, long-term, short-term? And does Vince still have the power to authorize that sale or to tell people to sell? Once again, it's a little confusing as to how much he really can be involved.
Well, I mean, he's got 38% right. of stock, but the board of directors probably have the power, and he's not in the board of directors.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, he's going to have to be, you know, part of all this. I mean, as far as what's going to happen, I always thought it made sense for, you know, NBC Universal to buy the company. They're spending so much in rights fees every year.
Yeah.
And WWE still owns all the intellectual property, and they own the tapes. It's like, if you own the whole company, even though you'd be paying rights fees, you're in a sense paying rights fees to yourself, number one, and then you would have ownership of all of this property, you know the library and all the tapes going forward that you can monetize in other ways, as opposed to, I mean, WWE, it'd still be under WWE, but it's not like I'm spending $265 million a year for Raw, and I can't even put it on reruns. They have all the rights to the reruns of putting it on secondary or videotapes. You know, obviously that's out of the question, but future streaming or international deals, you know, Vince or WWE still owns everything about that. You're just renting it. You're licensing it for the United States market. You know, if you buy the company, not only do you get the rights to continue the television show, but you also can sell that show internationally and make that television money, you know, yourself.
Yeah. And when Lucas sold Star Wars to Disney, I was like, okay, it's only a matter of time before Vince sells the Disney too. And like, obviously take all the scandal stuff, you know, like a Hulk Hogan character walking around Disneyland or Stone Cold Steve Austin or all those intellectual properties that are owned by the WWE. It just seems so natural to be part of the cartoon world of Disney. So I thought, okay, I thought it's just a matter of time before he ends up selling it.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought since 2016, when the price of UFC got to $4 billion,
right,
that all of a sudden it's like, now we're talking, you know, giant, giant, giant money. And he could probably get, you know, I mean, he would get much more than that now, as would UFC. But yeah, I thought at that point that at some point there would be a sale. And I think a lot of the moves that Nick Khan has made, to me, feel like getting ready for a sale, like really leaning out the company. Right. So the profit margins look better and you know, all of that type of stuff. So I've always thought that that's in the offing at some point anyway. And with Vince out, I think, you know, I think it speeds it up, as does Wall Street.
Two more things to discuss. Vince, we said, would you know, you have to pry WWE from his cold, dead hands, or if he has to step back, which he has. Never would have happened if these scandals hadn't come out. But now that they have, we're already seeing some changes in the programming. Obviously, we saw what Triple H did with NXT and his mindset there. What are some of the major changes that you think we'll see in WWE in the long term and even now in the short term?
I mean, it's going to be Triple H, Paul, you know, it's going to be his vision. And I don't know him well enough to know his full vision. Obviously, I watched NXT and studied it very hard. But he himself has said what he did in NXT was not necessarily what you would do on the main roster. And if I was in, or you were in that position, if you were going to market a thing as kind of like that niche product to fans like you and me,
right.
You know, the NXT thing was really good at that before it got on television and the whole thing kind of changed. But if you and I were in there and we were put in the position, we've got to run WWE, we've got to cast a wider net. I mean, and just like with AEW, you know, you want to, it's like, sure, you know, you've got that hardcore audience that really loves your stuff, that comes out and cheers really, really loud. But in the long run, you want to cast that wider net and get, you know,
you
more people.
Yeah.
And you have to. And there's no magical way. I mean, like, some people go, oh, look at what Vince does. But it's like, it's not necessarily, you know, Vince has, you know, I mean, as someone who's been on both sides of the fence with AEW and WWE, Vince has giant advantages of being around for, you know, the company being around
yeah.
since the 50s that Tony doesn't have. It's just, it's a catch-up game. So that's not to say that, oh, what Vince does is the perfect way to do it. And plus, if you're the competitor to Vince, as we both know, the worst thing to do is copy Vince, because then you're just the second rate Vince. You want to have your own thing. Now, what, you know, Paul Levesque is going to do, you know, I mean, I think it will be, there will be closer to an NXT, but I don't think it will be exactly NXT. And, you know, I mean, that there's so many fascinating things about
right.
this, because
agreed.
It doesn't just affect that company. It affects every aspect of wrestling. It affects the independents. Is he going to be quickly trying? Is he going to go in there with the mentality that everyone who's good on the independents, I want to get in early? Or is he going to go, I will get a few independent guys, but I really want my idea. And we don't know. My idea of stars is these big, good-looking, you know, college volleyball players and college football players with nice hair, and we'll teach them to be wrestlers, which is one of the things that they've tried to do with NXT of late. And I would suspect you would want a little bit of both, but it's like, what's he going to do? And then when AEW contracts are
right.
up, to me, that's the real fascinating thing for you and for everyone there, because I mean, you like you're a unique talent in the sense that when your deal's up, you know, I mean, maybe it's, I mean, I think it's probably better for you because, you know, you don't have that stigma. I mean, I don't know that the age, you know, Vince always had that age stigma. You let Hogan go early.
Right.
Randy Savage go early. Roddy Piper go early. I mean, as the years have gone on, I think he's learned from that. But I think that, you know, like I said, with you, when your deal's up, you're going to be in a great position because you're Chris Jericho. Right. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of guys. I'm just going to throw out a name. Okay. Darby Allin.
Right.
Right. Because we all know Darby Allin is a guy who, a month ago, if his deal was up and he were to go, Dave, what should I do? It's like, stay with AEW. Do not go there. They will not understand
right.
you. You will never get a push there. You're going to be miserable. Not saying everyone's miserable there, but you will be miserable there. Today, I don't know that I say that, because the guy, we'll have to wait and see, but he pushed Johnny Gargano, who's not a big
yeah.
guy at all, in NXT. And will he push, you know, will he start pushing Johnny Gargano on the main roster? Does he bring him back? Will he start recruiting guys that don't have the great physiques that Vince liked and put him in the main event spot? If a Bryan Danielson or CM Punk sneaks over, will there be that sort of ceiling on them of like, okay, the cult people like them, but they still can't be our big Hollywood number one star. He may go in there and go, listen to the crowd. The crowd's telling us it'll be the big star. I don't know. Or maybe he'll go, you know, I mean, he's still a big bodybuilder guy himself, you know, at heart. And maybe he's going to go with that idea that, yeah, they can make us money and they can be on top, but we still have to have that Roman Reigns, 6'3", 265 chiseled, great hair, good looking movie star guy to be the face of our company. Or maybe he'll go, hey, you know what? I look at the ratings and I look at the whatever, you know, like the
sure.
fan reaction. And I'm just going to go, maybe CM Punk's the guy. Not that CM Punk's the one guy I don't think will ever be back there. But when it comes to guys on the AEW roster, you know, there's going to be stuff. And then, you know, it goes both ways in the sense that, you know, he'll have guys that maybe he doesn't like it, that maybe will go to AEW. But it changes. I just think that, like, from an AEW standpoint, I think the whole business for Tony Khan has changed. I think it's going to be tougher for him. Not to say that, you know, it will be that he can't compete or that all the talent's going to want to leave. I don't believe that for a second, but I do think that the salary structure of the guys, especially the top guys, I think that the top guys, the leverage, you know, because Paul also, he wants to show that I can make those deals. You know, like I can bring in that, you know, make a Cody Rhodes deal, which was like a big one for Vince, that, you know, he's going to want to show that. I mean, I remember when years ago when he made the Bruno deal.
Right.
And that was the one where everybody thought, you know, that will never happen. I mean, of all the guys that were around, you know, everybody comes back, Brett, whatever. Right. And you always go Bill Goldberg, whatever, you know, everyone, they say they're mad, but everyone comes back. But Bruno was the one who I always thought not a chance, 0% chance. And Vince always thought that too. And Paul came up with, you know, I want to try to get Bruno back. And Vince like was like, yeah, good luck. Right. And he made it and he did it. I remember talking to Bruno, you know, after I'd heard about the overtures and I was just kind of like, yeah, you think that he's going to, you know, Paul Levesque's going to be able to bring Bruno back. And I talked to Bruno right after and he's talking all positive about Paul Levesque. Oh, I like the guy who's Kowalski guy. And, and he's told me about the changes in the company. And I mean, it was a business deal, but he liked Paul and he was at like, he went from like zero to, yeah, if the right business deal, I'll go back. You know, I mean, it was a hard deal to make, but, and everything, but you know, Paul made the deal that nobody thought could ever be made. And I'm sure he's going to want to, you know, continue to do that.
Of course. And you don't think he wants to wash away whatever stigma is that NXT, you know, quote unquote failed, right? He's on a mission for that.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, I was writing about that the other day. And I mean, that quote of it's not a sprint, it's a marathon.
Right.
And when they moved to Tuesday, we said like, the marathon's over, you guys won.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow. You know, it's like, it is still a marathon and the marathon is just starting again. And of course, you know, he's going to be stung by losing the first one. And that's going to make him even more competitive now that he's got power with the, you know, like with NXT, he had only so much backing. He still was taping from that.
Yeah.
You know, the he wasn't taping from an arena with 5,000 people or 10,000 people. You know, he had that disadvantage. He didn't have all the top talent. Now he's going to be taping in major arenas with that big budget and with that huge amount of star power. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, when some TV deals comes up and it's just like, you know, him trying to push the idea of, hey, let's move SmackDown to Wednesdays from 8 to 10. I mean, that's not happening this year, but you know, I mean, all of those things are going to be in play. And
it's,
you know,
it's all in play, too. I mean, because Tony's no pushover either. All depends. Once again, it's going to be very interesting in a year when AEW's contracts come up. If the demos stay the same in the same range, suddenly, if there's a bigger deal for AEW, then you really have some big time plays coming up.
Yeah, that the AEW television deals is, you know, that's the biggest story.
Yeah.
That and the prospective WWE sale and the AEW television deal when they come up with the two biggest stories to look for. Now that Vince is out, you know, Vince is, you know, yeah, that's going to determine, they're both going to determine the future of the industry. I mean, you know, when you look at, oh, you know, this, they signed this guy or this guy had a 5-star match or whatever, you know, or, you know, you're just kicking ass and in, you know, your pay-per-views are going way, way up. I mean, that's all great stuff, but the big picture is that television deal,
yeah,
and you know who buys that, and yeah, Tony, you know, Tony's in it for the long haul, and you know, I think people underestimate Tony. I mean, as far as what he's done to build a company to be this competitive,
this fast,
you know, it's really unreal that he's been able to do that, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves because so much of it. I mean, people go, oh, you know, rich father and blah blah blah. It's like, you know,
made no difference.
I've seen rich people come and go in this business. I mean, they, you know, they come in and they're gone in 6 months, or even like with Dixie Carter, you know, who was there for years and years, and she was never competitive with Vince like Tony was. Tony had an eye for talent. Tony has that love for wrestling that you know, you can't manufacture, and you know, the sleepless nights where you're up all night and your head's buzzing. What if I tweak this? What if I do that? He's that guy. So
right. Always.
Yes, he's going to be no pushover by any means.
And that's the thing too, is to me, you know, talking about, you know, Tony versus Triple H or Triple H versus Vince as well. I know a lot of people are like, oh, okay, Triple H is in charge. So now all those guys would go back or guys would come back. Like, to me, the secret why WWE worked was Vince. And he's a once in a lifetime thinker as far as how wrestling is. Now, are all of his ideas golden? No. but he's one of the smartest I've ever seen at taking a scenario. I used to say, like, okay, let me show him this water bottle. And he looks at it and goes, well, how about if you took the water bottle and moved it a little bit to the left? And you'd be like, oh my gosh, it's a so much better of a water bottle just by moving it a little bit to the left. I never saw that. Vince is a guy that was a genius amongst all of the geniuses. And now he's gone from WWE. Now you have Triple H, you have Stephanie, you have Khan, but Vince is gone. So there will be a lot of pros to him being gone, if you want to call him that, but there's going to be a lot of cons as well. No pun intended. It'd be interesting to see in the long run how Vince not being there really affects that company. Because another thing is too, Vince has power over everybody with his Jedi mind trick and aura. I'm not sure Hunter has the same. He wants to have it. He does have it to an extent, but Vince is different level.
I mean, you know that dynamic better than almost anyone, because you know,
right,
you worked with both of those guys. So there's, you know, there is that. The other thing too with Vince, obviously, is Vince has been in this business since 1969,
yes,
learned from his father. And, you know, while the world has changed and the business has changed, the fact is, and you know, you can do this with yourself when you come up with ideas. Sometimes, you know, like, let's say you have an idea for yourself and you kind of like, you have your experience from your childhood watching wrestling in Winnipeg and all that. And you kind of go like, okay, I remember when I was a kid or even when I was an adult in the 90s or whatever, and they did this, or maybe even they did,
yes,
this in Japan, or maybe they did this in Mexico. And this is like, I can incorporate all this. That experience that Vince has is more than all of us.
Right.
It's more than everyone. I mean, they have to a degree, but he would know from, you know, like just all kinds of little things that you learn. And yeah, like, they're his proteges, but he would know so many tricks. When you talk about,
he just knows more. Yeah,
you talk about the moving of the bottle, and it's just like those little things in an angle, those little things in a shot or a crowd shot, or, you know, position yourself here and all that, that he would just know because he knows.
Yeah.
And they have to learn. So I mean, there are little things like that where, yeah, you know, that's an interesting one. And then, you know, I mean, the other thing too is, like we talked about before, there is going to come that day where there's some big deal and they got to choose, there's some big,
right,
deal, and Nick says A and Stephanie says B. It's going to happen.
Yep.
They're not going to agree on everything. And like, how that's settled is going to be a very interesting thing. And also, maybe Stephanie's ultimate goal is wrestling and Paul's ultimate goal is wrestling. I don't know if Nick's ultimate goal is wrestling. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it's like, it's a great stop, but I don't know that he envisioned himself being in this business for 40 more years. And maybe he does. I don't know him well enough to know that, you know. But with Paul, you know, I think that he just wants to be in wrestling and he wants to recruit and he wants to build this company. And that's his final destination. I don't think Paul wants to be a movie star anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So these are all new, it's all new dynamics that are going to have to wash out.
It's a whole new world. It's amazing. Last question for you though, Dave. What does Vince do now? He doesn't seem like the type that's going to, you know, start planting a garden or, you know, go live on the beach, you know, shrimp fishing or something. What's he going to do?
You know, that's a real interesting one. Maybe he can flip the switch and just go, I'm so rich that I don't care and I can do whatever I want. I'm just going to go to Europe on Wednesday and I'm,
yeah,
going to rest and I'm going to just lift weights all day, you know, and all this, you know, I don't know. But for him, it's the culture shock of all culture shocks. You spend your entire life, you know, pretty much 24 hours a day, rarely sleeping, you know, except for his gym time, you know, it's all devoted to this goal of creating wrestling and running this company. And now you're devoting 0 hours pretty much to it. What do you do the rest of your time? And man, I don't know. I don't know. But I don't, you know, it's like he'll have to learn to live with that. I wish I had his money because I would be so happy that it wouldn't, you know, told me like, if I had that money, I'd be, you know, I'd be fine.
It's interesting too, though, like, but Vince is such a passionate, thriving guy who loves the art of the confrontation and the creativity. Is very strange just to think he's just gonna be able to shut it off, especially when you know and I know that it wasn't done, you know, by design. He was forced to do it. And I'm just wondering, man, is he gonna wither and shrivel away or is he gonna come back? Maybe him and Shane will start up some new company of something, some entertainment company. I mean, He still has his name value pretty much as Vince McMahon.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because of how he went out. I don't know. I mean, like, I think if that XFL had taken off, he could have at least.
Yeah.
But he probably would have had to. That's a funny one, because if he had, the XFL was a separate company, could he? But it's water under the bridge. It doesn't matter. The XFL, he folded the XFL. I think if he hadn't folded the XFL, maybe he would just devote 100% of his time to football, because he didn't, there's no misappropriation of funds there. But maybe he would have to leave there too, just because of the name.
Right,
I don't know.
Right.
But I know some people have talked about the idea that, like, he'll have a non-compete. Would he start up something? But I don't see him. Plus, it's like I don't see it possible. And the other one is I guess Tony proved that it's possible. But man, going up against WWE and AEW now at the same time and trying to start something, even if you're Vince McMahon, and then having to get new TV deals and not having all those guys under contract.
Yeah.
But I don't expect him in wrestling, and I don't expect him in a major company thing in entertainment either. I think that he's out, but time will tell.
Well, Vince, if you're listening, you have an open invite to join the Jericho Appreciation Society. Dave, great talking to you as always, man. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens over the next year or so. And I'm sure we'll have lots more to talk about for the next time we do this.
Oh, yeah. We're gonna definitely have a lot to talk about over the next 2 years. That's for sure.
Thanks, man. Always great talking to you.
Okay. Bye.